live from the Nashville Sports Radio Studios, this is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show. Call Johnny now at 844-5600 and online at WNSR.com. And now, here's Johnny.
And good afternoon, everybody. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you. A reaction Monday. Zach Williams making sure everything runs smoothly back in the studios. We'll be with you until 6 tonight. A little bit later this afternoon, Ryan Callahan joins us this hour. He will be talking Tennessee and Kentucky. He joins us from Knoxville with GoBalls247.com. Just after 5, a lot of NFL discussions because, like right now, in just a matter of moments, the Kansas City Buffalo Bills game will be kicking off. Yeah, strange, I know, but at a 4:05 kickoff this afternoon. And then followed by the regularly scheduled Monday night game a little bit later on tonight after 7 as the Dallas Cowboys with Andy Dalton at quarterback hosting the Arizona Cardinals. So we'll keep you updated on this Kansas City-Buffalo game. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, Barry Wilner joins us from New York, the Associated Press writer. Pro32.ap.org is their website, but he is the man, the pro football writer with the Associated Press in New York. Zach, hope you had a great weekend.
I did.
Well, I'm just going to throw this out there real quick because I've been, you know, early on, as far as with COVID-19, been very open and honest about what has happened in my family personally with, you know, with my oldest brother, one of the first 1,500 people to pass away due to complications from COVID-19. And I, over the weekend, I became one of the stats. So I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing now. Do I have the symptoms? Absolutely. It came out of nowhere. Luckily I have a great immune system, and luckily with the rapid testing and a nice steroid shot, I feel like I'm in control of this. As I knock on wood here, but let me just keep on telling you, I've been one of the individuals, Zach, and you know this as well, you know, I've been one of the most vigilant people, you know, being very, you know, concerned, doing all the proper things, showing you my hand sanitizer, eating, getting flavored hand sanitizers, the washing of hands, and doing all the proper things. But, you know, it's one of these things that just shows you, even if you do the right things like I've been doing and our family's been doing, it still, if you let your guard down, it can still get you. So, you know, I'm fighting through this. It hurts, and I'll be the first one to admit that. But I just want to be upfront and honest and let that out there. And I appreciate, you know, especially already the thoughts and prayers, so people who do know about it, appreciate that as well. But, you know, we will get through this. All right, coming up, like I said, we'll be talking some college football and more. What was, Zach, as far as from your standpoint, what was the biggest thing? Obviously, it's yesterday, the Tennessee Titans get the lead against the Houston Texans, and then the Texans come back and some great you know, management there in the fourth quarter by Mike Vrabel and the Titans to go into overtime. But what an outstanding performance, 1-2 punch with Ryan Tannehill along with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I mean, what Tannehill has done now, I mean, I think everybody's firmly off the it was too much money train that they paid him or anything like that. This is his team. He's playing at an MVP caliber level, and it's time for everybody to start talking about Ryan Tannehill up for the MVP, because he really has been playing that well. And even more so, then you have Derrick Henry, obviously, and what he's able to do and the games that he's going to show up and be able to put the 200-plus yards. It's crazy, though, that this was the most yards in franchise history with the Tennessee Titans. They got over 601 yards, and this is the most of the history of the team they've ever put up. They've never had a 300-yard passer, 200-yard rusher, and 100-yard receiver in a game. This team right now is just doing a lot of special things. And the biggest thing I'm taking away from yesterday is what the loss of Taylor Lewan's going to be. What is that? How is that going to affect this team?
For those that don't know what Zach's talking about, he put it on Twitter earlier today. We kind of knew by last night it was going to be bad, that it was involving an ACL injury, and he does have a torn ACL. He is now expected to miss the rest of the year.
And I honestly, just the way, and you've seen the play too, I don't think he was playing on a healthy knee anyway.
Well, see, you know, remember, you know, he had you know, even last year, but, you know, earlier this year, you know, he who knows, he probably had a small tear, and that small tear became what we, you know, and look, that is so many times often the case anyway. You know, it's not like, I mean, so am I, kind of like buy into what you're saying there, that, but when you're a lineman, you think about the body weight that's on a body like that. You know, your body is not designed to carry weight like that anyway, and that's why you have the nice braces and all that. But yeah, I'm not going to totally disagree with you on that one.
But for the whole as a team, I mean, if you're talking about the good, we know the good. The bad, though, I think is equally obvious, and that's the secondary looked just pitiful. I don't know if it's more or less this Texans team coming into their own and some of these targets like Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks, who are top talents in the NFL. When they're on the field and healthy, they're always dangerous. They can stretch the field quickly. But you look at Darren Fells was getting involved in that game for the Texans, and Deshaun Watson starting to come back into his arm where we've seen him before. But the secondary for the Titans, I don't know if Adoree Jackson coming back puts a Band-Aid on everything. I don't think it fixes the real problem for the secondary. Every one of those stats that they had last night were terrible. And that even goes with Kevin Byard, who we know is good, but up against, you know, a bad secondary like he is, he's even going to get drowned as well. So the secondary has to start stepping up, and I just don't think Adoree's going to be the answer when he comes back.
Well, the other part, too, you know, I thought that people, yes, you know, all week long, I think they were showing no respect at all for the Houston Texans, and I thought that's just asinine, because the Houston Texans, you know, the reason why they were 1-4 going into this matchup was primarily their schedule, and, you know, they did have some issues in the house, too, and that's why there's no more Bill Brunn. But they, to me, the schedule was one of the main reasons. This was not a bad football team. And that's why I really felt like the Texans and Deshaun Watson, they were going to come ready to play yesterday. And it was very fortunate for the Titans to get the win, pull it, you know, force the overtime, and then get the win in overtime. But how about Derrick Henry? You know, and I understand, I saw some stats yesterday. I always like to remind folks of this. They always brag. It's always like 30 teams. A reminder, 30 teams, because the Patriots never had a chance to draft Derrick Henry so back in 2016. Because remember, that was the year they had to forfeit their first-round selection. Mm-hmm. So the Patriots was the only NFL team to pass on Derrick Henry. So 30 teams passed on Derrick Henry. Actually, it was 31, because the Titans passed on Derrick Henry not once, not twice, three times. Remember, they had three second-round draft picks that year. And the Titans selected Derrick Henry with their third second-round draft pick that year.
Can you imagine if they didn't get him?
I mean, can you think about that? I mean, because that's remember, that was the Kevin Dodd and then the Austin Johnson, and then that's when they finally got Derrick Henry with their third second-round pick. So the Titans were also one of the 31 teams that passed on Derrick Henry, and the Titans passed on him three times.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine if the history changed and the Titans weren't able to be a part of that. But it's just what he's been able to do. Because if you think about it, there was a time still, even when Derrick Henry was on this team, where people thought it's time to start trading Derrick Henry or use him while we still have a chance to use him. That was not that long ago. We're talking about a year and a half ago, maybe, not even. Early in last season,
no, remember, early last, they were still playing, let's split the carries kind of deal.
Yeah.
Let's do the committee thing. And that was the first 2 years. Now, but in the second half of the last two seasons, it was the Derrick Henry show. But I go back, it reminds me of like Jerry Rice. You know, they always talked about how he didn't have game-breaking speed coming out of Mississippi Valley State. But did you ever see anybody catch him when he was in the open? Yeah, it may take Derrick Henry a little bit to get up to steam. But do you ever see anybody chasing Derrick Henry down when he's in the open field?
He hit almost 22 miles an hour.
I know. I mean, that's the crazy part about it. And then if you even get anywhere close to him, you have to deal with the forearm.
Right. He played phenomenally. And getting him in space, and really I think what we're seeing with the Titans too is they are using him in the passing game finally. It seems like they're really starting to let him take more of the receptions and more usage in the passing game. And we saw like in overtime when he had the ball in space again. I mean, anytime you can get Derrick Henry the ball in space and him to get that momentum up, he's tremendous. He's the best running back in the NFL when that's the case. And they just need to continue to find ways to get him the ball. But there was just so much success. Once again, one of the biggest things that came out yesterday was that we saw a Titans team find a way to win. They could have easily lost that game. A Titans team for 3 years ago, 2 years ago, they wouldn't have won that game. But this team is now finding ways to win with 4 seconds on the clock, going to their star players who were playing like star players, and they got it done.
The other Tennessee story was the Tennessee Vols on Saturday. There was a reason why all of last week I kept throwing out the stat that Tennessee had not lost to Kentucky in Knoxville since 1984. There were 33-2 in the last 35 meetings against Kentucky. Law of averages tell you that's got to come to an end someday. And the fact that those two losses actually occurred last decade, but both of those wins for Kentucky, 2011 and 17, were up in Lexington. And Saturday, that was, you know, here's a Kentucky team not once but twice took advantage of Jared Garantano's 2 interceptions, took him back to the house. And boy, for the second straight week, we talk about a no-show for Tennessee in the second half, as Kentucky with a blowout 34-7 win. And to lead into that, if you'd like to be a part of the show, 615-844-5600. And I'll be the first one to say, I wasn't surprised. That's why I took Kentucky in the points on Saturday. I thought that Tennessee, coming off the disappointment the way they played in the second half against Georgia, knowing there's Alabama coming up on, you know, this Saturday, and the fact here's Kentucky on a road trip, knowing that they were on a business trip because they had to pack their bags and go into Knoxville to play this game, I thought that it had all the potential for exactly what we saw Saturday. But 615-844-5600, Jeff in the Borough, welcome to the show.
How's it going, Ballpark? I hope you get better.
Thank you. I feel like I'm going to, you know, I'm gonna be one of the lucky ones. I feel very fortunate, and I feel like I'm right where I need to be. Saturday, I'm hoping Saturday was the worst, because that I don't want anything like Saturday again. It was really bad, and so, but I feel like I'm going to be in good shape.
It didn't be in my thoughts. So, but just wanted to say the game Saturday Ballpark, I told Bill King, it's a hurting day. It was a payback from 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Kentucky had one of the best teams they've had in a long, long time. They went to Knoxville, they laid an egg.
Right.
And turned that off 24-7. And Stu said after that game, it's on me. It's on me. It's on my staff. We didn't have them prepared. We weren't ready. And this time, it wasn't going to happen this time. It wasn't going to happen.
How did that feel, by the way? Because, you know, here I was just throwing that out there, and one of the things I was talking about on Friday and Saturday, with my college football show, I was talking about the fact that I was in college the last time Kentucky went in there. Teresa Walker was a student at Tennessee, and she was at that game. And the fact that it's been that long ago, that's the part. Now, I know it's disheartening for the Tennessee Vols fans, but, you know, no team in the SEC should have to endure what Kentucky has done to the hands of the Tennessee Vols.
Well, it couldn't happen to a nicer program, so, in my opinion. So their fans, you can't find them today. They're not around. You can't find the ballpark. They're not going to call in and talk about it. So you know, they're not going to, and you know, that's just the way it is, you know, and that kind of thing. But, you know.
But see, I was unreal. You know, I just thought all the talk about this is a year for Tennessee Vols to be great, and I just thought that it was unrealistic.
They thought they were back, ballpark. They won six in a row last year. Remember that?
See, here's the thing. You can't be great in the East if you can't dominate South Carolina, Missouri, Kentucky. I mean, remember, we go back to the first two contests. South Carolina has on the edge over Tennessee, and that was nice for Tennessee to get that win. Same thing applied with Missouri with the edge over Tennessee since Missouri joined the SEC. So before you can get in the conversation of great, you got to take care of business against those teams, including Kentucky, which they have. But they have to beat Florida, Georgia, Alabama. Well, now, you know, here you are losing to Kentucky. So
I'm just saying, it's not your, you know, this is a different time, ballpark. We got smart students now, but we don't have Bill Curry anymore.
Well, here's the thing, too. You know, today, Jeremy Pruitt fired his defensive line coach. I mean, 4 games in, the defensive line coach is gone.
And they owe a 2-year contract, $650,000. That's what they owe him, so they got to buy him out. Let's get another job. But I do want to ask you, ballpark, did you see where Tennessee got fined for not wearing a mask of Jeremy Pruitt? Did you see that?
Well, the SEC and the memo got leaked, but they're fining up to $1 million per team. For you get find $100,000 and it escalates from there up to $1 million per team.
Good.
And if you're not paying attention, so
that's
right. Well, look, well, Dan Mullen tested positive for COVID-19 now, too.
I know DM and Texas A&M and Lever School got hit for that. But now just a great win for Kentucky on the road. We just keep knocking down doors, keep chopping that wood, like Stoops says. And, I mean, you know, we won't get much respect. We'll get some in Middle Tennessee maybe now. I doubt it, though, with one win over Tennessee. We got to put two or three or four in a row together before we get the respect from the media and also the fans of Tennessee. Because one guy called up a show I listened to in Knoxville Saturday. He said there's three things in life: death, taxes, and beating Kentucky.
Now, Jeff, here's the thing. You know, I'm part of the media too. You got to give me a look. You got to give me a little love there because I love. You know, I've been loving me some Kentucky football in the last 2 or 3 years.
You called it right. I'm not gonna lie there. You called it right. But I'll say this one thing in my life. There's three things in my life I like to do: beat Tennessee. I'm for Kentucky, and whoever's playing Tennessee, if Iraq was playing Tennessee, I'd be for Iraq. I would be as simple as that. So, guys, have a great day. Ryan Callahan waiting for your comments and also your comments on Jimmy Brumbaugh. See who y'all can replace him with. Hang in there, ballpark. Hang in there.
Hey, appreciate it, buddy. Thank you. I mean, the bottom line is there's certain teams as a football fan or even as a sports fan, they're like Switzerland to me. And when they have good things happen, like I talk about Missouri with a goal line stand to beat LSU, major thumbs. I mean, you can't help but like moments like that. Or, you know, seeing Texas A&M prevail like they did against Florida. So there's just certain things that happen. But, you know, taking away from the fact that we live in the state of Tennessee, you know, no team in the SEC should, especially they're playing every year, should lose at the home side of the other team every year since 1984, Zach.
It's just, no.
I mean, so I'm glad that that stat is now done because that's just not right in the sports world. I'm
trying to think. Alabama and Tennessee got to be getting close to that at some point here.
Well,
right?
No, it's not that bad. It's not that bad yet.
Not yet, but they're on the path.
Well, I saw this thing from a memory from 2 years ago, and I'm getting ready to post it again sometime this week. But, you know, it's like a take from the Dos Equis where, you know, it's not often that I lose to Tennessee. And then he goes, well, wait, no, I never lose to Tennessee. Yeah. So I couldn't help but laugh on that. But remember, for Tennessee, you know, they had issues with Florida, too. And so, but once again, if you want to get to great, you have to beat, if you're Tennessee, you have to beat Alabama, Georgia, Florida. But you have to also take care of business against teams like Vanderbilt, which they have been struggling with the last 7 or 8 years. You know, Missouri, South Carolina, Kentucky. And so I don't know what the answer to that is yet. It certainly starts with quarterbacks not making mistakes. I mean, and, you know, if you make one mistake, don't allow that one mistake turning into two mistakes per se. Brian Maurer, by the way, who did not play Saturday, he has denied that he is in the transfer portal. So we'll get into that conversation with Ryan Callahan as well. But, he, you know, four quarterbacks, and he was one of the four that did not see action on Saturday against Kentucky because Harrison Bailey did, JT Stroud did as well, but no Brian Maurer. But he has said that, no, I'm not quitting on my teammates in the middle of the season.
Yeah, so, that's a good thing.
So that's where we are at that point.
They need more, as many quarterbacks as they can get.
A lot to get to, a lot of interesting games. Not only how about, by the way, just like I also felt like, you know, just because of the way Florida State played against Notre Dame the prior Saturday and that they discovered who their quarterback, you know, 2 weeks ago they discovered their quarterback. And boy, how about a nice upset win for Florida State, a program that desperately needed some kind of success, knocking off a previously unbeaten top five North Carolina team on Saturday night.
They're getting towards it.
And then Bama. I mean, Bama trailing at halftime. And then, oh, by the way, Georgia did not score at all in the second half. And so that was one of the other outstanding performances on Saturday. A lot to get to. A lot to get to about the Sunday affairs as well. If you'd like to be part of the show, 615-844-5600. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Well, good afternoon. People are still rubbernecking as they drive by this crash here on 65 northbound at Vietnam Vets, trying to get up towards Goodlettsville. Traffic's just busy here on the South Loop. The West Loop, 440 eastbound, is also heavy as you come past Hillsboro Pike. A wreck with injuries in the 2800 block of St. Edwards Drive, and the fire department's been dispatched to that location. Celebrate autumn at Ober Gatlinburg during Oktoberfest. Now through November 1st, visit obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
What is it about a classic that appeals to us? Hello, I'm Sammy Stewart, president of F&M Bank. There are a few classics that haven't changed. This truck and these glasses. You know, with proper maintenance and a few upgrades, a classic still works today. We invite you to experience the classic customer service at F&M Bank that has been our hallmark since 1906. Check us out at myfmbank.com.
F&M Bank, your money.
Smart choice.
Hey guys, it's Zach from Millennial Sports Mornings here to talk to you about Hayes Nissan of Rivergate. They have been serving the Nashville area for more than 28 years with a long-standing tradition of providing outstanding customer service to anyone who steps on their lot. Whether you're looking to buy, lease, or service your vehicle, you can be sure that their team will dedicate themselves to your individual needs. They also offer much more than just legendary customer service. They will help you find the vehicle that fits your lifestyle, personality, and most importantly, your budget. If you like what you hear, then simply call to schedule an appointment at 615-865-7220. Again, that's 615-865-7220. Or you can just stop by at 1550-1550 Gallatin Pike North in Madison. And check them out on the web at nissanofrivergate.com. And look, you can trust me. Not only am I a spokesperson, but I'm a customer. That's Nissan of Rivergate, where your dollar always goes farther.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within. Oh.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting?
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
to. Twinsies!
I kinda love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR Skyscan Forecast. For this afternoon, we'll see mostly cloudy skies today with isolated showers, highs at around 76, with a south wind gusting to 17 miles an hour. And the showers will continue Monday night, with lows going down to 63 with a light wind from the south. Tuesday, it's going to clear up with partly cloudy skies, with highs at around 80. Utilizing the resources of the WeatherBug Network on Nashville Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's Rich Brennan. Sports Radio,
Listen to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show online live at WNSR.com.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Zach Williams, 615-844-5600. This breaking last hour is being reported by ESPN Adam Schefter that the NFL has informed the Tennessee Titans its review of how the team handled its coronavirus outbreak. It's concluded as far as the investigation. The organization will be facing a potential fine, according to a league source. Individuals will not be disciplined, and at this point there's no discussion on forfeiture as far as draft picks. But everything is concluded. The Tennessee Titans have been notified. Expect some type of potential fine coming up.
And that is basically nothing in this league.
That's what it sounds
like. You
get
a fine for everything.
It sounds like the Tennessee Titans are going to be very fortunate if this is indeed true.
Well, and what's happened is that, one, there was a lot of things that the Titans weren't obviously trying to break protocol. That was clear. And then also the other side of this is the other cases that started popping all across the country with all these other teams, and Titans just happened to be the first big one. So, The sky's not on fire. Everybody was all worried that everything was going to happen, and there's nothing that's going to happen like usual. The NFL's not going to take drastic steps like that.
See, the only thing I was going to go with that is the fact that they have been warning teams, really mad at the Raiders, for example, and John Gruden, and to me, I thought it got to the point where they were going to use the team as an example. So, and the fact that the players were told not to do what they did as far as at the local high school, and not be after, but before the fact, they were told not to do it. And so because of that, I thought that the opportunity was there for them to get hit. And I think if this is indeed the case, and we're only talking fines, I think they are very, very fortunate. 615-844-5600, Mike in Murfreesboro. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. I just thought I'd call you while you're still able to talk and walk and do things like that.
Thank you, sir.
You know what you said about Teresa Walker? If she was listening, you made her sound like she's about ready for the wheelchair.
Oh, you're funny. You're funny. Hey, we're young.
No,
hey, we're
the
still
one that's funny. I don't know the lady. She's a really nice lady. But you know what it is when you get a young lady stirred up?
Hey, I was in college in the 84, 85 as well. That was my senior year of college, so I'm older than she is. So I'll just say that. And I feel young. I feel still like a young whippersnapper. So
well,
I
that's
feel good.
Nothing. I was in high school in 1950.
Well, I just think that, you know, the fact that no team in the SEC, Vanderbilt, Missouri, whatever the case may be, but no team in the SEC, if you play the other team every year. And every other year at their home site should not have lost every other game like that. And during this stretch going back to 84, that's just not right in the sports world. So I'm glad to see that streak end.
I'm not a Tennessee fan. Don't claim to be. I'm a Middle Tennessee State fan.
Good
and
for
I
you.
Root for Vanderbilt, but my money goes to Middle Tennessee State. That's where my daughter went to school.
Okay.
But, I just thought I'd bring that up because, you know, it doesn't like a mad young lady. Hoo-wee.
Nah, she's good.
They can put a hurt on you.
She's good. She's good. Now, that was a bad day for her, I'm sure, as a student at Tennessee when that happened. But, you know. Hey, true story. I had a chance to be the associate AD at MTSU under Boots Donnelly, and I finished second for that job back in, you know, the first decade of the 2000s.
Uh-huh.
So I have a lot of friends over at MTSU. It's still
one of the guys I used to fish with was named Paul Cantrell.
Okay.
He was the dean of students out there, and he and I used to fish together a lot.
Yeah, every chance that when I was at Tennessee State, when we would go over to MTSU, it was like a little family reunion kind of thing, seeing all the folks. So it was always pleasant for me to go over there and shake a lot of hands.
Well, they're very good. You're talking about football. They have the largest undergraduate school in the state. I think it's 22,000-23,000. And they can't get a lot of, I don't know why they can't get football players or basketball players. Now, the women's basketball coach, he gets some pretty doggone good players.
Well, in MTSU, it kind of reminds me of what Florida State was in the 70s and early 80s, in the sense that Bobby Bowden had to build that program, and you have to have success. But a lot of the cases, too, students that were going to FSU, by that point, at least there were students going there that were fans of Florida State. For MTSU, you know this as well as I do. You go there, but it's also, you're talking about kids growing up fans of Tennessee, Vanderbilt, whatever the case may be, but a lot of Tennessee fans, and they're more interested in Tennessee athletics than they are MTSU athletics.
That's true. I fussed at a lot of people. I said, what did Tennessee do for you when you graduated from Middle Tennessee State? And they can't say much. And this friend of mine, he went to Tennessee Tech, and he drives by there to go to UT. Tennessee Tech, they need help, too. If you're going to donate money, donate to where you went to school and help them. Don't help
Amen.
Somebody else who's got plenty of money.
Amen.
But
well
I
said.
Just thought I would call you and let you know that you may be in for a heap of trouble, and I'm all for it if she is.
I'm good friends with Teresa. We're good. We're good. Hey, yeah, appreciate
you
your phone call,
yeah,
buddy.
I noticed that you're putting that on the air right now trying to soothe her feelings.
Well, are you're just not giving me a chance to dig myself out of this, are you? So
no, you just buttered up to her.
Thank you, Mike.
I'll talk to you later.
Appreciate that. Boy, Zach, Mike just won't even give me a chance to dig myself out of that, will he?
Nope.
I didn't mean anything by it.
Teresa will get you if she wants to.
Look, do I feel like you're around me all the time? Do I act old or feel old around you? No, I don't. And I'm older than she is, so there.
Mm.
I'm just throwing it. You stop it.
Mm.
right, coming up, we'll see if Ryan Callahan has any kind of explanation on how especially the second half played out with the Tennessee Vols and what's going on there. Are they going to be able to regroup enough to give themselves a chance at all against Alabama this week? But Ryan Callahan with GoVols247.com joins us on the other side. Hey, by the way, before we go to break, Tennessee, you know, sports betting is almost here, and FanDuel Sportsbook is giving you an exclusive offer to get started. Right now, FanDuel Sportsbook giving users $50 in free bets just for signing up. You heard that right. They're giving you $50 in free site credit to register and verify early. No deposit required. FanDuel, America's number one sports betting site for a reason. They've got odds on all the biggest sports and a simple, intuitive app that makes it easy to find the bet you're looking for and then lock it in. And unlike other sportsbooks, once you win, FanDuel gets you your cash in as little as 24 hours. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. But right now, the right thing for you to do, go ahead and download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and check out their fantastic app for yourself. Just be sure to sign up and register using the promo code Franks, that's right, Franks, so they know that I sent you. And when you verify your account, you'll receive $50 in site credit when FanDuel Sportsbook is live. That's promo code Franks to get $50 in site credit when FanDuel Sportsbook is live. And look, when I first looked at the app, I was surprised how easy it really is to use, and you will find out the same thing. I enjoyed it. Know you will as well. Here's a reminder. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 800-889-9789.
Well, good afternoon. People are still rubbernecking as they drive by this crash here on 65 northbound at Vietnam Vets trying to get up towards Goodlettsville. Traffic's just busy here on the South Loop. The West Loop, 440 eastbound, is also heavy as you come past Hillsboro Pike. A wreck with injuries in the 2800 block of St. Edwards Drive, and the fire department's been dispatched to that location. Celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest. Now through November 1st, visit Obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck, here on time traffic.
Nashville's premier steakhouse is Bob's Steak and Chop House in the Omni Nashville Hotel. Bob's Steak and Chop House was the first to bring A5 Wagyu beef to Music City. With a wine list to complement any meal, Bob's Steak and Chop House now has limited summer hours and seating. With the backdrop of Music City, call ahead and reserve your spot on the patio. Bob's Steak and Chop House, now with new limited summer hours and seating. Nashville's premier steakhouse, located in the Omni Nashville Hotel, 5th Avenue, downtown Music City.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go, and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-648-9175. 800-648-9175. 800-648-9175. That's 800-648-9175.
New appliances mean a family recipe simmering on the stove and fresh sheets in the dryer. At the Home Depot, they also mean saving even more on your next appliance. Like a Hoover wind tunnel vacuum. Right now, just $119, delivered free. Bring style and function home with fall savings on your next appliance at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Free standard shipping and residential delivery on most orders over $45 made at HomeDepot.com. Some exclusions apply, valid through October 21st, U.S. only.
It's a Bill King Show.
getting to the sodium pentothal time, which would be the games, because there's nothing that replaces the games. You can practice all you want. The truth serum is the game. Practice is very important to sharpen your craft, but it's not where you get graded. You get your report card from the stats in the ball game.
Weekday mornings beginning at 6 on Sports Radio 560 on 95.9 FM.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Call the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show now. 615-844-5600.
Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you. Zach Williams making sure everything runs great. Give you a quick score update. The first of two NFL games. This one kicked off just after 4. But Kansas City, after trailing early 3-0 to Buffalo, scores a touchdown. Travis Kelce with a touchdown reception from Patrick Mahomes. 2:44 remaining in the first quarter. It's Kansas City 7, Buffalo 3. A chance right now to go back to the hotline, Ryan Callahan. He covers the Tennessee Vols and the SEC for GoVols247.com. Ryan, thank you for joining us today, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
All right, first things first, a lot of speculation after Saturday. There's 4 quarterbacks that could see playing time. 3 of them got action on Saturday against Kentucky. One of those, not Brian Maurer, and then immediately social media blowing up that he's going to be entering the transfer portal. It looks like he's put that to rest. Is that indeed going to be the case? Because he basically sent out a statement saying that he is not going to leave his teammates midway through a season.
Yeah, he shot that down pretty quickly on social media, and right now there's no sign of that changing. You know, I don't have any reason to think he's likely to leave midseason. Now certainly this situation, the uncertainty Tennessee has at quarterback right now, you know, obviously anybody could be in the mix for playing time if things continue, especially the way they did Saturday. So anybody who doesn't get playing time now certainly might reassess things after the season. So we'll see how this plays out. But I think right now he's, by all indications at least, staying put, and wouldn't expect that to change right now.
I mean, here's the thing. If we were talking about September, he makes that decision, then whether or not he clears and able to play immediately or not, even if not, he would have been able to play at the end of September, say, next year. But now we're talking about, you know, it's October 19th, a different scenario. So if he's not given the waiver where to play immediately, it's going to be now 2022, for example. So because of that, it doesn't make a lot of sense anyway.
Remember, a one-time transfer exception quite possibly on the way next year that would potentially make any transfer eligible to play right away. So that's yet another reason, really no need to have any sense of urgency to leave right now if you were considering that move as a quarterback, because if the NCAA passes that legislation next year as expected, anybody could be free to go anywhere next year. So he can sort of wait things out right now and sort of assess the situation, and then still always have the option of going somewhere next year.
Those two words, as expected, you know, I never buy into that anymore because, you know, just as expected, Cade Mays should have been starting being able to play week one, and that wasn't the case. So nothing shocks me anymore with the way rules are thrown around. All right, so what was your we go back to Jarrett Garantano. You know, look, throw the pick six, you know, you're taught, you know, put it behind you, forget about it, and move forward. You know, the back-to-back pick sixes, that certainly did not help matters against Kentucky. But I even brought this up last week. You know, the fact that two teams that play each other every year, every other year at the other team's home site, you know, they're just something not right in the sports world. Because all those years, Kentucky wasn't bad. Now, they had some bad luck. But the bottom line is that Kentucky had not beat Tennessee in Knoxville since 1984. Law of averages, especially when we talk about, like, even last year, a game that was decided with just over a minute to go with the goal line stand after Kentucky jumped up 13-0 and lost 17-13. You know, law of averages tell you that Kentucky's going to eventually win in Knoxville, and that's exactly what happened on Saturday.
Yeah, and in recent years, you know, Tennessee had flirted with losing to them in Knoxville at some points anyway. I remember back in 2004, I think it was, they had Tennessee on the ropes against a pretty good Tennessee team that played for played for the SEC title that year, and Tennessee almost lost and had to come back late to win that one. So it's one that over the past 15 to 20 years, there had at least been some closer calls. But let's face it, for most of that run, Tennessee's had the better team. They've had more talent. Kentucky wasn't good for a lot of that stretch. But the last 12 years or so, Kentucky's really closed the gap and made it a much more competitive series. They'd at least won a couple times in Lexington since 2011, and now they get over the hump in Knoxville. It's a game that we always knew was dangerous for Tennessee. I think people always kind of – it was one of those games that, especially in Knoxville, people were kind of looking at it in a lot of cases like, I'll believe it when I see it. Now that it's happened, I think it's certainly one that's going to have Tennessee's attention much more going forward. I don't know if they overlooked them. I don't think that really mattered in this case. It just was not a good game for Tennessee in really any way. So a lot of things for Tennessee to address. And obviously it's been kind of a rough 48 hours for the Tennessee program in general, with just everything that's happened coming out of that game and just where that's kind of left things going forward with a game against number 2 Alabama coming up Saturday.
Yeah, we go back to the overlooking, and if that was indeed the case, then there's something wrong from the – that's a coaching issue. Because – and look, it was set up that way, knowing Georgia previously, no-show in the second half against the Bulldogs, Alabama looming this week. But, you know, Tennessee is not at that point where they can overlook anyone. So if that was indeed the case and the players weren't pumped up, ready to go, that's on the coaches.
Yeah, and nothing we've heard so far leads me to believe that was a major issue for this team. Now, I will say, anytime you're going on the road, I think you always are happy to have a noon kickoff. You know, I think it's a lot easier for teams to be flat as a home favorite, especially for a noon kickoff. So that always could come into play somewhat. But Tennessee's had a noon kickoff already this year. It wasn't like that was anything they had to adjust to, really. But that can take the air out of the game a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, Tennessee had they had multiple wake-up calls in that game. If motivation was an issue, you know, they had every reason to get up off the mat at some point and start playing, and they just couldn't. And that to me is the biggest concern for Tennessee going forward coming out of that game is you had – sure, the quarterback play is going to get a lot of the attention. You know, Jarrett Garantano is going to get a lot of the criticism coming out of that game. And fair, he had two pick sixes. That was a huge deal in the game. But even then, down 17-7 to start the second half, they had every opportunity to get back in the game. A lot of people thought they were going to win that game still, but the way they finished the half, finally putting together a scoring drive, I think people still thought Tennessee was the better team. In the second half, Kentucky just kind of manhandled them on both sides of the ball. Tennessee didn't get a first down in the second half until Harrison Bailey came in for the final drive of the game in garbage time and threw a 24-yard pass to Malachi Wideman down the sideline. So they did nothing all that well in the second half, and that was in a game that was still competitive coming out of halftime. So that lots to be concerned about. But to me, I just saw a team that frankly didn't look all that good, certainly didn't look any better than Kentucky talent-wise, I didn't think. I think that's a team that still it just doesn't have enough difference makers maybe on either side of the ball. And that's concerning that when they really needed to mount a charge coming out of halftime, they just kind of came up empty and didn't fight back at all in the second half.
All right, explain to me what happened with Jimmy Brumbaugh being let go. I mean, co-defensive coordinator, defensive line coach. He worked for 3 years with Derek Ainsley, the defensive coordinator, when they were at Kentucky. How can this go wrong after four games?
It's a great question. I think one interesting aspect of this, and this was touched on today, was that this is a year where Jimmy Brumbaugh only got two spring practices with his defensive line. So I think
right.
Some things that maybe you maybe could have had more time for him to work with his players this spring. Maybe you sort through some differences in philosophy or personality differences a little earlier in a normal year, but because this staff didn't get to spend as much time around each other in the spring and summer because he didn't spend as much time with his players during the spring. You know, all that stuff maybe got pushed back a little bit, and things that could have gotten sorted out in the offseason end up sort of surfacing during preseason practice and the season. So I think there were some concerns about this arrangement before this weekend, certainly. You know, there were some concerns there, some differences in style and philosophy, as Jeremy Pruitt said today, that – that maybe needed to be addressed, and maybe they could tell even before this weekend that it just wasn't going to work out long term. But you just, you know, you stick it out because usually you don't make an in-season change. But I think when you have a game like Saturday, you know, clearly something must have gone wrong coming out of that game. I don't think this is something based on strictly performance. I would be very surprised to hear, and nothing what I've heard so far suggests it was just a performance deal. I don't think you make this move. You know, it's a 2-2 team with 6 games to play. I mean, there's a lot to be decided about this season still. No matter how disappointed Jeremy Pruitt is in his defensive line, this leaves him with a shorthanded full-time coaching staff for the rest of the year. He's got to coach the defensive line the rest of the way. This is not an ideal situation. So this screams to me that this game Saturday sort of allowed some things to boil to the surface that just couldn't be addressed to go forward, and it's you're left with sort of a mess to clean up because the issues are not, you know, you shouldn't have to deal with this mid-season. You know, normally this kind of thing happens, you deal with it, and you get through the season, and everybody parts ways at the end of the year if that's how it has to go. This year, obviously, Jeremy Pruitt decided he couldn't do that with this situation, and that's it's a tough one for Tennessee, but I've not seen one of these. Usually when it's a mid-season coaching change, it's because of a repeated pattern of poor performance that you just can't ignore anymore, and I don't think Tennessee's defensive line was quite to that point, so I think there was more to it than that.
Well, this tells me it's still a first-time head coach learning how to let go that he's not the defensive coordinator. He's not just a defensive-minded coach. He's a head coach. It also, I mean, look, you've had Derek Ainsley there. He's in his third year. You bring in somebody for 1 year, and he also gets the title of co-defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody had to be on the same page with this, or there was going to be a problem. None of that makes sense to me.
No, and we had heard, you know, Jeremy Pruitt had made multiple comments publicly, you know, really being pretty critical of his defensive line going back to preseason camp, and that was a little bit unusual, we thought, even at the time, a little bit harsher than you often hear him discussing different position groups. So it was a very public call out during camp, and he it's not been as bad since the season started, but after Saturday's game, again, he was pretty pointed about that group not being physical enough, not dominating at the line of scrimmage. And that was a concern for him. But I just think, you know, issues that you have that tend to not be as much of an issue when you're winning or when things are going okay become a much bigger thing when things go wrong, obviously. And I think this was a case where some issue that was maybe there beneath the surface became a source of contention maybe coming out of Saturday's game. And it just maybe got to a point where they just decided that it wasn't going to be a fit anymore. Hard to say for sure why it went that way, but I think there were clearly some concerns that this became a more pressing issue this weekend, and that can happen sometimes in a tumultuous season or coming out of a tough loss like that.
Well, you know, obviously we had talked about the fact that he was always praising the backups and not the starters or the projected starters on that defensive front. The other part makes me wonder just how much was Tennessee able to get done as far as especially the players on their own in the involuntary workouts as far as physically getting ready for this season. And that's not necessarily on your defensive line coach.
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges that come with this year. I think that is, you mentioned that, and that's one of the interesting things about this. Tennessee's defensive line was maybe least affected among the different position groups on the team,
right,
by all the COVID-19 quarantines they've had throughout the roster during the preseason and since the season started. They've not had many issues with the defensive line, so I think there's a sense that group maybe has fewer excuses to be struggling a little bit. And again, look, I don't think this is just a performance thing. I would be very surprised to find out if that was the case, because I just think they're, when you look at the issues Tennessee has on its roster right now, I'm sure fans would agree that defensive line is not at the top of the list. It's an issue. Don't get me wrong. They need to play better there, and that group has regressed a bit since last year. When they overachieved, I would say last year under Tracy Rocker, the former defensive line coach, and this year they've taken a step back for whatever reason with a handful of seniors playing a lot for them. So it's a weird deal, but I don't think this is just a performance thing. I think sometimes you just don't know how you're going to work with people until you get them on your staff. And this is a guy that Jeremy Pruitt had not worked with in the past. You mentioned he worked with Derek Ainsley at Kentucky, Ansley, obviously the defensive coordinator, wanted to work with him and spoke highly of him. And maybe this wasn't a fit with the head coach. Sometimes that happens, and you find out the hard way. And when times get tough, you decide it's not going to work anymore.
Did he take responsibility, Jeremy Pruitt? Did he take responsibility where the team is right now?
He's repeatedly done that. Yeah, he's been the anti Butch Jones, I would say, in that regard. When they've had some bad losses, and he's even in kind of pointing to some mistakes that potentially could be perceived as him throwing blame at other people, he'll stop often and say, that's completely on me. I'm the head coach. It stops with me. It starts with me.
Well, that's exactly why I was asking, because this decision sounds like he's throwing somebody under the bus.
Well, so that's the thing. I think it could be perceived as, I think that's the initial inclination, is for people to say, hey, is he just looking for a scapegoat here to make things look better coming out of a bad loss? And I don't think that's the case. I don't think that was if you were doing that, to me, you would make a change on offense. That's where Tennessee's most glaring problems were Saturday, not so much on defense. And I don't think he was looking for a sacrificial lamb or anything like that. I think this is just a case where, maybe two people just aren't on the same page, aren't working very well together, and they just decided it was not going to work out, even sooner than expected. Again, these things often are sorted out in the off season. Professionals decide to let it be for a while, and they do what they need to do to get through the season, and you get to the off season and deal with it then. I clearly things got to a point where they couldn't be resolved, and they decided to move on. But I don't think you don't get the impression from the optics of this that performance alone was the factor. So I don't know that it was throwing someone under the bus as much as just two people reaching an impasse and sort of having to work together day to day, and maybe just not being on the same page in a number of ways.
All right, appreciate you as always. Let people know what they can expect when they go to govols247.com.
Yeah, tons of coverage this week, obviously breaking down all of this and the staff changes and how that's going to affect Tennessee going forward, recruit reaction to that, and lots more, breaking down the quarterback situation. All of that as we look forward to Saturday's game against Alabama. Check it all out, govols247.com, and sign up today, 2 months for $1 to get VIP access to the site right now.
Thank you so much, Ryan. Have a great week. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Johnny.
Thank you, buddy. Coming up, we'll wrap up hour number one. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Good afternoon. We're looking at this crash here. It did have some injuries. The fire department just left on 24 eastbound at Briley Parkway. It's heavy enough here as it is on 24 right now as you head back towards Murfreesboro. It's a crash at Old Harding Pike at Bellevue Road out on the west side. The Mumbream at 12th was blocked up pretty good a few minutes ago. On that accident, they're still working that crash 1400 block of Brick Church Pike. Celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest. Now through November 1st, check it out, obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck with you. You're on time traffic.
The final lap with Kerry Murphy is on.
NASCAR Cup Series racing from a cold Kansas Speedway. The winner of the race automatically locking themselves into the championship event at Phoenix in just a few weeks. So who will it be? 10-1 is how we're going to do things here. Christopher Bell at number 10. Then you got Martin Truex Jr., William Byron, Ryan Blaney, number 7. Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, number 4. And the top three look like this. Alex Bowman, Kevin Harvick, dueling door-to-door with a 22 car, who heads to victory lane. Joey Logano secures his spot in the Championship Four race, nabbing his third win of the season, one of which, by the way, was Phoenix earlier this year, and his 26th career victory. All right, so other stories on the day. Chase Elliott won Stage 1. Denny Hamlin, Stage 2, but a brush with the wall ended the 11th shot at this one. Matt Kenseth found the wall, sending him to the garage early. Jimmy Johnson tangled with Chris Buescher, dooming the 48th shot at a good finish. Kurt Busch, in the round of 8 drivers, blowing an engine, sending him to 8th place in the standings. All right, so the bottom 4 in the round of 8 are, as mentioned, Kurt Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Alex Bowman, and Chase Elliott. That's how tight things are right now. Up next in this round is Texas Motor Speedway coming up this weekend, and then it's on to Martinsville Speedway.
Like us at facebook.com/thefinallap. Like us.
We saved serious cash with our Progressive Home and Auto Bundle and used the money to buy a new boat.
Who's ready to water ski?
This is not a real testimonial. Sure, customers can save big money with Progressive, but not enough for a new boat. They'll probably spend it on rent or gas money or maybe one of those little plastic wading pools for the yard.
Ahoy there!
Is what the captain might say. On the toy boat. In your wading pool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
With so many new pet owners, Kezia's Grooming can't keep up.
Kezia's Grooming? Sorry, we'll book solid through the weekend. I can give you a call back, though, if something opens up.
It's time to hire.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. The moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Indeed delivers 2.5 times more hires than the other branded job sites combined, according to Breezy HR 2019. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Listen to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show online live at WNSR.com.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Zach Williams. So far it's been Buffalo with the edge in this contest with the Kansas City Chiefs. Buffalo on a short 4-yard touchdown pass from Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs. They lead the Kansas City Chiefs 10-7, 9:19 remaining before halftime. Josh Allen for the second straight game so far way off. He's 4-12, 25 yards, but he has the touchdown and the Bills have the lead 10-7. We'll keep you updated on this. A lot of NFL talk in the 5 o'clock hour, Tennessee Titans and more. Alan Bell joins us on the other side. He is with CBSSportsLine.com. As always, we know you have choices each and every day, and we appreciate you making our show and our station a daily destination. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.